Calling it a shock and a surprise, the student body and faculty of Sweetbriar College say the recent announcement that the all-women's college is closing is simply disappointing. The 114-year-old small liberal arts college is not alone, though, when it cites financial challenges and difficulty in attracting students. Right now, Sweetbriar has just under 600 students, and the student population has been going down each year, Rose.
And Dennis, here in the metro area, the plight of Sweetbriar is not foreign to the presidents of Agnes Scott and Spelman. Dr. Elizabeth Keish and Dr. Beverly Daniel Tatum lead their institutions in a time where all universities and colleges face rising costs, but at the same time must increase endowments. And individually, each college faces challenges unique to their school. Well, joining us in our Closer Look studios, it's a historic day. You guys have never done radio together. To talk about their overall state of higher education for women, Dr. Elizabeth Keish and Dr. Beverly Daniel Tatum. Presidents, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Let's begin with your reaction to the news that Sweetbriar College was closing. We'll start with you, Dr. Tatum.
Well, like most of us in higher education, I was very surprised. There had not been, to my knowledge, any public discussion about the financial distress, and so they had resources and students enrolled, and so I think most of us were pretty shocked by the suddenness, at least to the outsider, it appeared sudden, of this decision.
Absolutely. We were very stunned as well. And I think especially also the rapidity of the decision that they're closing at the end of this semester.
And also, and Dr. Keish, you're a part of the Women's College Coalition. So here's the question, and we've seen this before, you know, the challenges that all women's colleges are facing, particularly in attracting students. Dr. Tatum, you and I have also talked about this. When you hear it's primarily financial, does that sort of sound an alarm for you and kind of make you also want to take a closer look and assess your own financial health at your institutions?
Well, not really. And I would say that because, as I like to say, and I've said on the show before, Spelman College is healthy, not wealthy, but definitely healthy, and with a strong enrollment base. Every institution has its own concerns relative to that. We do know that in higher education, there are trends toward students wanting to be in an urban area, often large institutions, and of course co-ed is more popular. But we know that one of the benefits, certainly for schools, both Agnes Scott and Spelman College in the Atlanta region, is that we are in an urban area. And while we are small institutions, we are in consortia that give our students access to a larger population. And in the case of Spelman, we're across the street from a men's college, so that all of those things put us in a strong position.
So you have an advantage, Dr. Keish?
Well, Agnes Scott is also going strong. You know, we've had actually 4 of the 10 largest first-year classes in our 125-year history just in the past few years. And as Beverly said, you know, we benefit from being part of the greater Atlanta area. We have dual degree programs with Georgia Tech and Emory, and we, you know, we've really been growing. Looking nationally, there are 45 women's colleges across the country, and actually applications have been up 53% over the last 10 years to women's colleges. Yield is also up looking across the board. So I think a lot of people have looked at the Sweetbriar decision and said, oh, this is all about women's colleges. And I don't think that's the right conclusion to draw. I think, you know, colleges have to find their formula for success. That's true for all colleges. And Sweetbriar had a lot of tough things going on, it seems, in retrospect. But it doesn't mean that other women's colleges aren't going strong.
Dr. Keish, you just said what I was going to ask you, in a sense, the right formula. And you have chosen, at least at this point, to maintain independence, stay an all-women's college. There are others, Sarah Lawrence, for instance, and a few others, Wells up in upstate New York, that have gone co-ed. Others have simply folded themselves into adjoining institutions. So how do you find the right formula? And when you say, okay, we're going to share classes or share facilities with a neighboring college, do you soldier on alone? What are the questions that you have to ask when you're deciding whether or not to either share or even go co-ed?
Well, I think every college has to think strategically, build on its strengths, figure out how does it make itself market relevant and attractive to prospective students. So at Agnes Scott, we're launching a very exciting new initiative called Summit. It will provide every student with a four-year focus on global learning and leadership development, and that begins this fall. Every student will build her own board of advisors. Every first-year student will get to go abroad. So it's a very exciting program, but we're not unique. Spelman has done, and Beverly will tell you, great innovative things. Lots of colleges are rolling out distinctive programs that make them different and relevant. At the same time, I think it is true that colleges are looking for ways to collaborate with other institutions.
Because you have cost to consider.
Absolutely.
Let's face it.
Absolutely. And so that's, you know, whether it's purchasing and saving costs through shared purchasing, which both Spelman and Agnes Scott do through Georgia Independent Colleges Association, whether it is through cross-registration policies and practices. I mean, there are lots of ways in which colleges seek to reduce costs.
Indeed, I could, to piggyback on that response, Spelman is a member of the Women's College Coalition. Dr. Kish is the president of the coalition at this moment, the chair. But I serve as the chair of the Atlanta Regional Council for Higher Education, as well as the Associated Colleges of the South. And all of these consortial arrangements, and as well as the Atlanta University Center, allow us to share resources, whether that's using technology to have online classes using shared faculty, or a shared library. Access to Galileo in the Arch system is an important resource for all of our institutions. So these are important ways to contain costs and allow us to remain independent and give our best to our students.
And while you all work to manage your cost, then the other side of this is the cost of the tuition for the students. And you have to be able to make sure you have enough resources and that there's financial aid for your students. So balancing all of that, and Dr. Tatum, we'll start with you, because, and also being part of the HBCU community, the importance of maintaining your costs and then making sure you have resources for your students to make sure they can not only come to the school, but stay in school.
Retention is the number one concern that I have talked about during my presidency. And as you know from previous interviews, we launched a major fundraising campaign at Spelman. $150 million was the goal. The result was $157.8 million. And of that, $53 million of it went directly to scholarship support for students. Because we know that getting into school is just the first hurdle. Being able to afford and stay in school is so critical. And the worst possible outcome is for a student to start, take on debt, and then not be able to complete her degree.
And particularly at a school that they want to go to.
Exactly.
Dr. Kish?
Yes. Well, we are also in a campaign. We've raised $91 million towards our $100 million goal. And our alumni are very, very, our friends and alums are very generous. They also, we've raised quite a significant amount for student scholarships, but also for support for students to have those life-changing experiences. We've raised almost $3 million for what we call Advantage Awards that support students to study abroad, to do an internship, or to do mentored research. And those are the kinds of life-changing experiences that differentiate our graduates from those from other schools.
You know, you talk about life-changing experiences because within the last 10 years also, we've had a recession. So that has had to play a part, like for any company, or whether it's a mom and pop or a major corporation. How do you manage that through a recession, and you're counting on donations and students are counting on financial aid from banks? Well, we all know what happened there. How did you all manage through that storm?
In our case, it really was about focused fundraising. The fortunate thing is that our alums and our friends did really rally to the cause. I take great pride in the fact that 71% of our graduates contributed to the success of our campaign. And particularly when people talk about HBCUs, they often raise the question of limited alumni support or alumni support. But in our case, the Spelman women really stepped up, and I'm really proud of the fact that we've been able to sustain their involvement during the course of my presidency. But you know, the college now is about to celebrate in April its 134th anniversary. I think about, you know, the fact that it was here and thriving, or at least hanging on through the Depression, the Great Depression, you know, World War One, World War Two. We are resilient institutions.
Go ahead, Dr. Kish.
Well, I completely agree. Colleges are incredibly resilient institutions, notwithstanding the Sweetbriar story.
not to pile one more challenge on top of the ones that Rose already mentioned, but this is one that's going to face you in the future. You've got institutions offering online courses, and there is, for, especially for students who have trouble affording tuition, this is seen as more and more of an alternative. Meanwhile, you can only go to the major capital, major fundraising campaign well so often. So as you look to the next decade, is the rise in online courses perhaps more of a threat to schools like yours than it is even to other traditional institutions? And Dr. Tatum, I'll start with you.
I know that the online movement, I'm going to call it, is one that gets a lot of airtime, but the reality is the success rates are quite low. And so when we look at the fact that in the case of Spelman, we have the highest graduation rate for African-American women in the country, we know, and I say to parents, if you want to start and finish, you want to look at the success rate of the institution or the program that you're entering. We know that the hands-on experience of a small private liberal arts college is one that is hard to replicate online. And it's one of the reasons why students finish more likely in 4 years, go on to have access to graduate school or employment opportunities that they want if they choose an institution like Spelman. And I know the same is true at Agnes Scott.
But going back to, and Dr. Keisha, I'll start with you, and then going back to Rose's question about affordability, a lot of students, given the rising costs, are going to look at online courses as an affordable alternative. Are you going to be able to continue to reach some of the students you really want to, those in minority and disadvantaged communities?
Well, at Agnes Scott, we're very proud of how we support all of our students, including our low-income students. And as Beverly said, you know, we also have a very, very healthy and high graduation rate. And we do that through the through generous financial support. We do it through keeping tuition increases low. We have kept our tuition increases to around 3% for the past 7 years. And I think one of the stories that's very important for folks to understand is that private four-year colleges like Agnes Scott and like Spelman, their net cost to families is actually very competitive with four-year public institutions. As far as online goes, I mean, I completely agree with Beverly. Online is a very exciting new aspect of higher education. We run an online summer school at Agnes Scott, but it is not a substitute for the kind of close mentoring relationship that you can get with faculty at a residential liberal arts college.
And how crucial is it for you all to make sure that you're also offering, Dr. Keish, you are very instrumental and very active about technology, women in technology. We also know about the spell bots over at Spelman in the STEM fields. That has been an industry that we keep hearing we need to have more women involved in that industry. So how crucial is it for you all to make sure at your institutions we have those core industries that will attract and keep students wanting to come to your institutions?
Well, I think this is a place where women's colleges as a group have really excelled. If you look at women in STEM and the success of those graduates, more of them come from women's colleges than perhaps any other sector. Certainly in the case of Spelman, we were very proud to be recognized by the White House recently for being the source of more African-American women who earn PhDs in the sciences than any other institution in the nation. So one might ask, well, why is that? And I think it's because you have the high expectations, a sense of this lab space, this classroom is designed for me and my success. I don't have to take the back seat to young men or anyone else in the space of a women's college.
We just had a member of the Agnes Scott class of 2014 receive a national award for the best undergraduate economics research paper in the country. And I think that, as Beverly said, it's absolutely true that women's colleges are real launching pads for women to become leaders, including in male-dominated fields. And I would include STEM, economics in that category.
Dr. Keish, after Sweetbriar made its announcement, you obviously suddenly had a potential pool of students for Agnes Scott. So what are you going to be, are you going after them, number one? And number two, will you be offering these Spirit of Sisterhood scholarships to Sweetbriar students?
We will. We, in fact, that very day of the announcement, my wonderful colleagues in admissions were able to establish a webpage for interested students from Sweetbriar transferring to Agnes Scott. We've received almost 100 inquiries so far and are actually working on a memorandum of understanding with Sweetbriar. I can't even imagine how devastating it would be for a student to have her college suddenly announced that it's closing. And so we really wanted to reach out to Sweetbriar and say, for qualified students, they have to apply and, you know, they have to make the cut. But for qualified students, we really want them to come to Agnes Scott.
Dr. Tatum, are you all going to jump in that too?
Well, let me just say that, you know, as an institution, as a historically black college for women, our demographic is a little different mm-hmm. than that for Sweetbriar, but we have had some inquiries from Sweetbriar students who are interested in considering transferring to Spelman, and certainly we would welcome them.
I want to talk about another issue that has come up for women's, all women's institutions, and that is policies and admission policies for transgender students. Either of your institutions have a policy? Is there something that you all are crafting if you don't?
At Spelman, what we like to say is that Spelman admits students who self-report as female.
Dr. Keish?
Well, that's also true of Agnes Scott. We have actually been very involved in conversations around transgender inclusion at Agnes Scott, and we've had a statement since around 2011. Have done education with our Board of Trustees, with our community around Trans 101. And I guess what I would say is that women's colleges have always been a home for trailblazers. You know, when you think about it, being a woman lawyer was considered gender nonconforming
sure.
activity, right? Or minister, or any number of the things that Agnes Scott educated women to become. And so in a time when individuals are questioning the gender binary, we also need to be inclusive and welcoming communities.
And so just to be clear, it is about how you identify. That's it.
One of the things that I, you know, my conversations with my fellow women's college presidents, my colleagues, one of the things that we all recognize is that we have applications. We ask students to identify themselves on those applications. We don't ask for physical proof.
Sure.
So when someone self-reports as female and wants to enroll in a women's college, we accept them, assuming they've met the other criteria.
Dr. Tatum, this question is for you because it looks at, you mentioned demographics. Historically, black colleges have never turned away white students, as far as I know, but it's a unique niche that you occupy. But when you're looking at a pool of potential students, do you ever think, okay, we may want to do some recruitment among white women, and then how does that, you know, if that thought has crossed your mind, then how does that affect, because of the quality of education that you offer at Spelman, the mission to educate young African American women?
Well, we are in a very privileged position because of our special niche. So there are only two historically black colleges for women in the nation. We admit our goal is to enroll in a first-year class about 520. We average 5,000 applications a year. So there's a great deal of demand for what we offer. So we are not specifically reaching beyond our traditional demographic, but that is to say we get students. One of our graduates is currently the White House head of the executive director of the White House Initiative on Asian and Asian Pacific Islanders. And you might say, well, who is that? But her name is Kiran Ahuja. She identifies as South Asian. She's of Indian ancestry. She transferred to Spelman from Emory after her first year there and graduated from Spelman. So not all of our students, of course, are women of African descent, but that is the primary population that seeks a Spelman education.
We've talked about the student. Now let's talk about the leaders, which is your positions. Dr. Tatum, you're leaving here at the end of the fiscal year. So how crucial is it to make sure that the person coming after you and that we still have the right leadership when it comes to women's, all women's institutions here? And should it be a female that leads that institution?
Well, leadership is critical. It's absolutely critical. And I take great pride in having had this opportunity to lead Spelman College for the last 13 years. As you have mentioned, I am retiring at the end of the year, and I know the Spelman College Board of Trustees has been working very hard to find the right leader, and I look forward to when that announcement is made.
So you're not going to give us a hint?
I am not.
Dr. Keish, leadership?
Leadership is absolutely critical. And I have to say it's been such a pleasure being kind of sister president with Beverly. We recently co-sponsored a conference for women's college presidents and deans from around the world. We had 17 countries represented at the conference. And we've also collaborated on sustainability and many other innovative areas. And so I will miss Beverly, but I'm glad she's staying in Atlanta. But I'll miss having her over at Spelman.
I want to echo that. It's been a privilege to serve.
Dr. Elizabeth Keish, Agnes Scott College, Dr. Beverly Daniel Tatum, Spelman College, thank you all so much for coming in and taking the time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you
so much.